This is Carl the Jackal Frampton.
Hi, this is David Healy.
Hello, this is Stephen Ferris.
Hi, I'm Bethany Ferris.
My name is Shola Amiobi.
I'm Jonas Gutierrez.
Hi, this is Harry Kuehl.
You're listening to The Score.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Hello and welcome along to The Score with me, Michael Clark. Yes, I was sunning myself last week, but we are back with the season finale. And boy, did the end of the season deliver. Helping us wade through all of the drama, all of the action, is sports journalist Keith Bailey. Nothing beats knockout football, as we have seen yet again. And two of the big stars of those games join us on today's programme. The Irish Cup winners, of course, were Cliftonville. Chris Curran finally has the full set of medals in his trophy cabinet, and he will be on the show in a little while. And we'll also hear from Crusaders hero and stalwart Jordan Owens. He got the crucial touch to send Stephen Baxter off into the sunset with a victory and his team back into Europe. It is all coming up right here on The Score.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Well, I hope you weren't feeling neglected last week whilst I was off groomsman dutying in Rome. But I am back, and the football might be finished, but the programme still has an hour left in it for this season. And let's get right into it. A recap of some of the best bits, some of the big moments of the last couple of weeks right now with the help of a familiar voice to you, the one and only Keith Bailey, journalist, of course, with the Belfast Telegraph. Keith, how are you?
I'm not too bad, Michael. It's good to be on the show. I appreciate you inviting me on.
Lovely to have you on, as always, Keith. And it has been really, really thrilling, hasn't it, this conclusion to the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's been one of the greatest ever Irish League seasons, or at least one of the greatest ever finishes to an Irish League season, you know, right up until the last week of the season after the league campaign had finished. Yeah. You know, a promotion relegation playoff on Friday night that went down to the last 10 minutes of the game. You had an Irish Cup final that went to extra time, and, you know, incredible scenes there at Windsor Park on Saturday. And then Monday, you had the European placed final Conference League slot decided in stoppage time in the playoff final. So, I mean, it's been an incredible weekend, and really, I think, a fitting end to what's been a brilliant season. I did mention there, of course, Armagh City gained promotion by beating Derby in penalties in the Championship promotion relegation playoff. So, I mean, that game shouldn't be overlooked either. So we've actually had four fantastic games over the last few days.
I want to start with Cliftonville in the Irish Cup. My goodness, they've had to wait how many years? There was lots of mention of that. We bring it up every single year, and now we don't need to anymore because they finally got over the line, and it turns out that fella Magilton knows a thing or two.
Yeah, I mean, thank goodness we didn't have to talk about the supposed curse of Cliftonville in the Irish Cup. We'll be glad to be not writing about that in the future. It's sort of something that has maybe been overplayed in the past. But, I mean, it made for incredible scenes on Saturday. When Cliftonville, you know, when it became clear as Hale burned down and goal with his arms in the air, 45 yards out and running towards this empty net, I mean, the emotion and the noise in that stadium was something that I had never seen in Irish League football before. I mean, it was palpable, the emotion. It genuinely was incredible, and Cliftonville fans were out in force. 7,000 spectators are sold out in a matter of, what, less than a day. And it really did feel like an incredible moment for that club, and a seismic day for them. The game itself was interesting, enthralling, engaging. You kind of never really felt like you could take your eyes off it. But you wouldn't have necessarily thought it was going to pan out that way in the first half. I mean, Linfield were the better team. They deserved their goal, and they had, if maybe not clear-cut opportunities, certainly had the possession in the territory to expand, to extend that lead. And I think David Heaney might have been frustrated at halftime. They were only 1-0 up. Well, second half was a completely different story. Clifton came out all guns blazing and thoroughly deserved their equaliser. And by the end of the 90 minutes, they probably felt like they could be the team who'd already won it. And they carried that on in the extra time. And come the full-time whistle after extra time, I mean, there was no doubt that the team who was going home with the cup was the team that deserved to win it. Clifton Bowl just had extra energy, extra desire. And I think, you know, the substitutions that Jim McGilton made were much more effective than the substitutions that David Healy made, and that certainly played a part in the second half and in extra time. And that's really credit to Jim McGilton, because when you look at it, like, he essentially lost a sub when he had to change goalkeeper midway through the first half. That's probably what prevented Joe Gormley from not getting the kick in the Irish Cup final, which is a great shame. Then obviously the terrible injury to Dodder and Casey, which was a real setback for the Reds. But again, you know, Kenny comes on and does just as well. But just Jim McGilton responded very well throughout that game and got the best out of Clifton.
It was amazing because I was able, thankfully, to watch this from my hotel room in Italy. And I don't know whether that makes me dedicated or very sad or both, but I could not take my eyes off of it. And you're thinking, like, Linfield are 1-0 up. Cliftonville have players dropping like flies. We find out, you know, there's injuries happening on the pitch. There's illness in the lead up to the game. They're clearly struggling. It felt like the world was conspiring against them. And yet somehow they found their way through this. And the goal that put them in front was an absolute belter. It's a goal worthy of winning any cup final, and yet somehow you could nearly forget about it because of the iconic way in which they sealed it with, as you've perfectly described, that run which felt like it lasted forever, as in slow motion Ronan Hale bears down in an open goal and the world knew what was about to happen. And then after he scored it, he did what anyone would do, he just collapsed.
Yeah, I mean, it is an incredible moment, that goal, because it was a sound of 15,000 pennies dropping, because when he has that ball so far from goal, he's obviously going to score, but it's going to take a few seconds, and it's just this wave that goes through the stadium of, he's going to score, oh, that means Clifton will have won the cup. You know, it wasn't an instant thing. It was like, ah, this is what's happening. A really unique moment and kind of fitting for Cliftonville to win the cup in that way. You're quite right, actually. I mean, the second goal in the game, his first goal, was outrageous, spectacular. You know, maybe one of the best, maybe the best Irish Cup final goal since Glenn Little, possibly, without being able to remember them all off the top of my head. But a really special moment that weirdly has been overshadowed by a second goal, which I think he'd admit himself was quite a bit easier. But yeah, it really was a momentous afternoon at Windsor Park.
And I want to ask about Linfield in a moment, because they're looking at a season where there are more runners-up medals than winners' medals, which is always a problem if you're Linfield, and their manager David Healy will be more than aware of that. But credit has to, you know, go to Cliftonville and how they've approached this. Is this a launching pad for them? I mean, how much can they continue to grow, do you think, of this moment? Or is it unfair to even look in those terms? Should it just be celebrated for what it was? The run where they had to take on a lot of the best teams in the country to get to the final and win the final?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think what Cliftonville can do in terms of, let's say, regularly winning the Irish Cup or pushing for the league title, they'll always be a little bit behind Linfield and Lorne for as long as they're part-time. So I think they will need to move to a full-time model if they want to, you know, compete for the Gibson Cup and compete for the Irish Cup on a regular basis. But maybe taking a step back from that immediate question, I think there's a sign there or a signal there of just how big a club Cliftonville can be. I wrote about this in McCall in the Belfast Telegraph this week, that, you know, throughout the history of Irish football, certainly since the demise of Belfast Celtic, there's been the clear big two. And some people, you know, try and dispute that, but, like, you only need to look at the trophy tallies to see that Linfield and Glentoran are the two biggest clubs in the country, and they've got the support to back that up. We've never really had a third biggest team. You know, you could argue at various different points over who that might have been. You know, Glenavon were the team of the 50s, and Coleraine had a great league win side in 74, and you know, Port of Down were a fantastic team in the early to mid-90s, and now you've got Lorne who are winning trophies, but, you know, nobody has really ever taken on that mantle. And I think Cliftonville have the potential to establish themselves as by far the third biggest club. That might not necessarily mean they win the most trophies, but just in terms of support, I mean, there's an issue there probably where their capacity is capped at solitude of, you might know off the top of your head, I think it's about 1,600, 1,700, something around that mark. You know, with better facilities there, if they can up their capacity so they can get up to 3,000, and I mean, I think they could sell out 3,000 on a regular, consistent basis. Clearly the interest is there in the club. They sold 7,000 tickets. They could have sold more if more were available. You know, there's obvious, and yes, I appreciate what some people think, is cup final always attracts extra fans. We know this, but there's clearly a bigger core interest there, and what that cup final win will have done as well for Clifton Blues, it'll have hooked a new generation of fans in who are maybe there for the first time or maybe just watching on TV. They'll want to go to Solitude now. They'll want to be part of it. They'll want season tickets, and they'll be hooked in for life in the way that so many of the kind of well-known Clifton Ball fans that you and I know were hooked in by 79, that this 24 will have that effect. So Clifton will have the potential there to be right up there with Enfield and Glentoran in terms of size of club, in terms of size of support.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought, and you're right. I mean, that fan base is so passionate, and the numbers in which they turn out go to show you that. I mean, they've had, I think, 2,000, maybe 2,100 in games at Solitude this season, so I think it's maybe just a wee bit above what you're thinking, but it could be so much better with the investment, and I know everyone is crying out for their share of the money, which we've been waiting on for such a very long period of time. What about the second part of that question, and Linfield? Where do they go from here? We've seen Jordan Stewart has already been announced having left the club and joining Crusaders. And Matthew Clark has gone to the Scottish Championship with Livingston. They're plotting, I would imagine, a few transfers of their own this summer. They must be feeling the heat with everything Lauren have done and how they've managed to just quite, you know, not quite get over the line when they needed to.
Yeah, and I think that David Healy is, you know, picking up some criticism from Linfield support at the moment. I mean, that's just the manner of Linfield, isn't it? If you don't win the Irish League, you don't win the Irish, that's not a bad season. And David knows that better than most. David Jeffrey would talk about that at length in the past. I think it's maybe a bit unfair, but it comes with the territory of accepting that job and taking that on. Certainly Linfield will have to improve their squad during the summer. I think they will probably look for a centre forward, you would think. Matthew Fitzpatrick is an interesting player in many ways because he's great at holding the ball up, and he brings players into play, and players can score goals off his forward play, but he isn't a massive goal scorer himself. I think he finished the season on 14 for Linfield number 9. To finish the season with 14 probably isn't what David Healy would be looking for. You would think they may dip into the market for a centre forward. They've obviously, two of their most important players are Chris Shields and Jamie Mulgrew, who still have time left in them, but obviously, you know, the clock is against us all, isn't it? They'll need to refresh in midfield as well. So yeah, there's definitely challenges there for David Healy, because at the moment, you know, the way the season ended, Lauren ended it in great form. Clifton will have a massive boost. So those two clubs are going into the next season, you know, absolutely flying on a high. So it's going to be tough for Linfield, and they will need to refresh during the summer.
And then you move on to, well, we call it the May Day Madness. What was a really, really excellent game between Crusaders and Coleraine? And Coleraine, having drubbed Glentoran, looked like a team that were, you know, going into this final with every bit of belief, despite being the away side, and as we know, also found themselves in front. And I couldn't believe the manner in which they conceded the two goals to then fall behind. But Crusaders, whatever you want to put it down to, they just seemed to find a way, didn't they? And Jordan Owens, who we'll hear from later in the programme, popping up with that goal. He's claiming the last touch, and he's bigger than me, so he can have it. He said, you know, he got that wee touch on for a safe shot. But Crusaders back in Europe again, and Stephen Baxter, as he steps away from league duties, will at least have a couple of European dates to put in the diary.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big win for Crusaders, and a big day it was too for Paul Heatley, you know, we believe it's going to be his last game in a Cruise shirt, his last game in the Irish League. What a great way to buy out on. You know, Stephen Baxter again, his last domestic game, I guess, is maybe the best way to phrase it. He's going to come back and help Declan Cadell in Europe because Declan doesn't have the required licensing. Another fantastic day for Irish League football in terms of like entertainment and drama, and that's exactly what you want from a playoff. I mean, that game swung one way and then it swung the other, and either team could probably lay claim to having deserved to win that match. It was Crusaders who came out on top, and it was just a dramatic day, and I think it shows really what those playoffs are all about and why they were introduced in the first place. I think an interesting factor of it is, more often than not, home advantage seems to pay dividends in that competition and in that playoff, and so approved the game for Crusaders. And you know, I think it's a massive boost for them financially. Crusaders are always a club who really need that European money coming in. We talked just a little bit ago about how the big support that Cliftonville will have, and that's obviously applies to Glentoran and Linfield as well. You know, Crusaders probably don't, you know, they're a well-supported club, they probably don't have that big kind of fan base that maybe their North Belfast rivals have. So European football is really important to them, and to secure it probably makes Declan Cadell's life a heck of a lot easier in the transfer window this summer.
The top half will be so competitive for places, and there'll be so much scrutiny on teams. There will be, as things stand, the two favourites every year to win the league, and then underneath that, Cliftonville are trying their best to pull away from the teams underneath them. You could say that they did that already this season, but you look at Glentoran, you look at Corian, you look at Crusaders, and you think they have different levels of backing, but they're all backed, and with the European football there as well for the Crews, it's an interesting time to see who finishes where in the seasons going ahead, because nobody's going to settle for 4th, 5th, 6th realistically with the aspirations that each club has.
Well, this is it. You know, you have 6 clubs there who are well backed and all want to win trophies, and naturally, inevitably, you know, at least 2 of them will be disappointed because they won't be in Europe and they won't, you know, probably won't win a trophy. So it's one of those things where there's 6 clubs who believe that they deserve to be near at or near the top of the mountain, and inevitably, you know, a couple will be disappointed. Listen, one of the worst aspects of Irish League football at the moment is the fact that those 6 kind of seem unmovable in that, you know, post-split fixtures. I guess, you know, Carrick were the closest this year to catching the top 6. They came, you know, relatively close, but that was, you know, Corian. We know now Corian have got financial backing coming in, so that might be tough for Carrick to repeat that. Again, can Glenavon bridge the gap and get into the top 6? Maybe, but it's hard to see who it would be at the expense of, unless one of the top 6 has some sort of financial crisis. It's hard to see that kind of monopoly. Maybe monopoly is not the right word when there's 6 of them involved, but you know what I mean. The control that those 6 have with those 6 places, it's that change in any tension. So that's something that, you know, it's been a positive season for Irish League football, no doubt about it, but that's maybe one point that is a bit disappointing, that those 6 are so firmly in those positions.
Glentoran have begun a big clear out. We've seen the list of names. 6 of the players that were on that list were among their highest minutes in the club in the last campaign. Some of those names perhaps chose not to stay rather than were asked to leave. We don't know the exact breaking down of all of that, but were there any names on the list that have surprised you? You know, obviously Shane McCartan for what was spent on him versus they're getting nothing for him leaving, but it kind of felt like that was edging that direction. What was your overall analysis on the list that they revealed?
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing amount of players to see leave a club. It's really hard. I think it's too early at this stage to know exactly what it means. I mean, well, the thing that's very obvious immediately is that is a huge amount of money that's coming off their wage bill in one chunk. Now, is this part of a drive to cut the wage bill and to maybe rein things in a little bit? Or is this just a case of we're getting rid of this amount of talent and this amount of wage off the budget so we can then funnel those wages into other players who we think will be better suited for us? I don't know at this point. We'll have to wait and see. Time will tell whether they reinvest in other talent or whether this is part of a cutback, and you'll maybe see guys like Kirk McLaughlin and Ben Cushnier and, you know, some of the other good young talent that they have at the club get the chance next season. It's hard to know, but they definitely have lost players there that any manager would want to keep. You know, nobody wants to, you know, who wouldn't want to have Bobby Burns in their team? Who wouldn't want to have Aidan Wilson at centre-back? Who wouldn't, you know, Shane McCartan is obviously been, I don't think it's unfair to call him a flop, and it's not a nice word to use, but like, for the amount of money they paid and the output they got out of it, it hasn't really worked out. But nobody can tell me he isn't a good player, and I'm sure another manager somewhere else will get the best out of him in the future. So it's a curious case, and we'll not really know what the situation is with Glenn Torn until the summer transfer window closes, whether this is Glenn Torn taking a step back from the model that we've seen under Alipur, or whether this is just, you know, a total kind of refresh of the playing squad, and they'll go again with, you know, a different set of players, you know, for the new season.
A list that included both their goalkeepers, half their back line, and their top goal scorer from the campaign. But you ask any Glen Torren fan and they will tell you they were nowhere near good enough this season. So maybe those big changes have been needed. Just want to ask you, because I thought it was quite got me thinking, to be honest. The article you wrote a couple of weeks ago now about your own little idea, how you could change the promotion relegation side of things to make it more enticing. What we got was pretty good, I must say, and commiserations to Institute in terms of just falling short of stepping out of the Championship. They're sick of that promotion relegation playoff thing. It's the fifth time now they have been unsuccessful in it. But, you know, they won the first leg, I covered that game, and the second leg in Ballymena, you know, on his 250th appearance, Stephen McCulloch pops up with a super free kick, and then they get Calvin McCurry's goal late on. And congratulations to Jim Irvine after an absolutely miserable first season in management. Let's be honest, that couldn't have been enjoyable remotely, just the sheer relief he must have felt at full time to do it. But your thoughts on that game, and your thoughts in general about how we could zhuzh things up a little bit, if indeed we need to.
Yeah, I mean, the Championship playoff was fantastic value and entertainment in the way it was, but I think there's scope there to improve it. And the inspiration to take from this is actually the European playoff that we've just watched, where we've had four teams in that way, two fantastic semi-finals and then an unbelievable final. I think like a similar format in the Championship could work really well, where you'd have a situation where 11th from the Premiership takes on 4th in the Championship, and then you have 2nd versus 3rd in the Championship, with the 2nd team having home advantage in semi-finals that fight for a place in a one-off final, and then that one-off final you give home advantage to the winners of the game between 2nd or 3rd. The idea behind that is kind of multifaceted from my perspective. On one side, it's just pure drama. It's just a great opportunity to put bums on seats. It's a great opportunity to have exciting and meaningful games at the end of the season. And then on top of that, I think it would also bring a little bit extra to the Championship, in the sense that you would have teams fighting for that 2nd, 3rd, 4th spot deep into the season. And with each spot, you know, there's a little bit of an advantage for finishing higher. So it's not like you're disregarding the league table altogether. You know, if you finish 2nd, you would have home advantage in both the semi-final and the final guaranteed. 4th, you know, you get into a playoff that, you know, as things stand, you wouldn't be expecting to be anywhere near. So I think it would bring a fair amount of drama and excitement to the end of the season. We had that this year in the Championship. The main end of the Championship season was unbelievable, with Institute Michael Harris scoring an injury time against Portadown to knock Bangor out of the playoff. I mean, unreal. But you can't guarantee on that happening every season. I mean, this year we had, I think, the top five were split by 4 points at the end of the season. I mean, that's unreal. That's unheard of. It's a one-off. It's freakish. It's probably not going to happen again, if we're being honest. So I think that the bringing in an expanded playoff format could, you know, just encourage more Championship teams to push on, maybe encourage more teams to look to completing their license, and just bring a little bit extra drama and excitement to a division that might has probably lost a little bit of something, because we've had a situation where Portadown are clearly a big team. They've gone up and out of the division, so that's a a fair amount of eyes who are on the championship that won't be on it this year. If Ballymena came down, that would almost be in place like for like, but that hasn't happened. So, you know, I think doing something like this, increasing the playoff, might just inject something into the division to give it a wee bit of a boost.
It was, and I think we should call it for what it is, the best title race in Europe. That's my view on it. You've just said it. 4 points between first and fifth. I know Dundella couldn't go up. The world knows that now. We've talked about it to death. But the way the permutations were playing out in that final round of fixtures, where everyone was looking and thinking, well, it's obviously going to be the winner of Anna versus Bangor, wasn't it? Except they cancelled each other out. And Institute go and score that goal. Cue pandemonium. It just absolutely delivered. So the league deserves more. It deserves more eyes on it. So that could be one way to do that. Indeed, if you're listening, you think you've got an idea, or if you like Keith's idea and you want to expand upon it, at The Score and I, drop us a message. In terms of growing this further, first of all, can we all agree to bin the phrase local football? Can we today agree that on the programme we are going to bin the phrase local football, because you don't hear it anywhere else? Can we do that?
Yeah, it's one of those things, like local, what does local mean? I mean, obviously it means, you know, kind of close to home, but local's a very vague phrase. It doesn't really mean anything. Like, is local your town? Is local your street? Is it your country in this instance? I mean, it's a very Northern Irish thing. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure that, you know, the Manchester Evening News doesn't refer to United and City as local clubs. I mean, it's a bit weird. It's like, it's almost the inference of it is local means rubbish, and we know the Irish League isn't rubbish. It's great. So yes, I agree. I'm on board with your campaign.
Lovely. So there you go. That's first item off the list. The second is, you know, in terms of where we're going, Niffl have talked about they want to make changes, they want things to grow. Do you think that means a change to the three-tier system as it stands? I mean, are we in the next couple of years going to see big changes in Northern Irish football, whether that be the calendar or the structuring of the leagues, and should supporters brace themselves for that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, in terms of the structures of the league, last year I was at the launch of the championship at the PIL, and Gerard Lawler talked then about how he said the PIL wasn't going anywhere, and you know, the league had no intention of scrapping it or changing it drastically. So I'm not sure. I mean, we have had discussions in the past about maybe going down to two divisions, but it doesn't seem like that's the direction of travel. So I'm not sure we're going to see like huge drastic changes to the format of the three divisions. Summer football, who knows? I mean, I feel like I've been talking about summer football my whole career. What I would like to see is at some point us having a vote on it, the clubs having a vote on it and having a say and making a decision on it, and that would need to be a decision that brings all three divisions with them, you know, because sometimes this debate is framed in a way where I'll hear people say things like, well, you know, seven of the Premiership teams are for summer football and five are against, or it's six all, and I always think to myself, well, there's actually, you know, 38 teams in the league, not 12. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a long way to go before there's any drastic changes in terms of seasonality. But let's get on with it. Let's have the debate. Like, I'm really open-minded about it. Let's have the debate and have clubs have a vote on it at some point. So, you know, I kind of get bored talking about it every year. I don't know about you.
Absolutely, but I'm still going to ask that question until the debate's had. Keith, so good talking to you. Thanks for your support of the programme throughout the season and indeed all the years. I hope you summer well, and we won't have much of a summer break if we're being honest, so let's savour the time we get.
Nah, it's about 2 weeks of one place staying, isn't it? So that never really ends.
Spoken like a man who knows. Keith Bailey, thank you for coming on to The Score.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Always good to get the views of journalist Keith Bailey. Now let's move on to the players. And what an amazing way to bring the curtain down on an amazing career. Chris Curran joined Cliftonville back in 2013 and he'd won the lot. Except for, like the rest of the people associated with Cliftonville down through the years, the Irish Cup. Well, that was finally put right at the weekend. We've all seen the pictures and the celebrations, and hopefully he's put back together in one piece to talk to us now. Chris, how are you?
Good. Very good. Just about coming round from the whole thing, but couldn't be better, to be honest.
The scenes afterwards were amazing. They really were. You could for lots of different reasons. People were so very emotional, and you had a great reason as well, because you'd already made your mind up and you'd kept it a great big secret from most people that you were, no matter what happened, definitely going to hang your boots up after that game. Just how glad are you that you got the right result to bow out on?
I can't even put it into words. It's just been a roller coaster, the whole thing. Yeah, I had made that decision some time ago. It's a decision that I've thought long and hard about, and I've had a lot of conversations with my partner and with my family around it. And yeah, just couldn't be more happy, couldn't be more relieved that we've managed to actually do it. And I couldn't have asked to go out on a better note. It's been an incredible few days, and yeah, like you say, just an absolute outpouring of emotion from everyone. Probably me being the worst culprit of that, getting a bit of stick from people that have haven't stopped crying, and my partner even, you know, turning around to me randomly at times. We'll just be sitting on the sofa and I'll be tearing up again watching videos or looking at different pictures and listening to things on the radio. It's just been the most incredible few days.
And believe me, I'm not trying to set you off again, but where do you think that's all coming from? Is it just because most people don't get to leave on their own terms and leave on a high, and you are, or what's that thought in your head that just keeps triggering you?
It's probably a bit of everything. It's just it's just there's so many factors. I think a lot of it comes from a lot of pain and frustration, I suppose, for us as a club, for our supporters over the years, trying just desperately to get our hands on that trophy. Coming up, you know, against massive obstacles in doing that. I suppose even the cup run that we had this year just shows you we don't do anything the easy way. Saturday summed that up. The game itself was obviously an emotion roller coaster in itself, with the way that it all just panned out, with them scoring first, us having to come back into the game to fight against all the odds. The lads deserve tremendous credit for overcoming that adversity during the game and showing up and showing that character, and in the end Ronan obviously got us over the line. But because we've been up against it and under the cosh for so what felt like such a long period, an extra time, and right up until the end we were just defending for our lives, it was just a relief. And yeah, I think we were all a bit overcome with emotion when the goal went in and the final whistle went.
Has there been a half like it? You suffer, you know, two injuries, you lose your goalkeeper, Oran Casey has to come off as well, and you're behind. You must be thinking, well, this is just going to be the worst day ever. There couldn't have been any part of you, or was there, thinking, we'll turn this around, it'll be fine?
No, I won't even lie about it. No, I was sitting beside Joe on the bench, and he was probably ready to hit me. I was giving him an ongoing commentary of the game, and not a lot of it was positive. And yeah, that's the way your mind goes. I think, unfortunately, to be honest, from a Cliftonville perspective over recent years with that cup, it's you're almost conditioned that way, just to believe that it's not going to go your way. And with the way that the game was just going, them scoring quite early, our lads looked a bit nervous in the game. We didn't really show up in the first half, but I remember just saying to Joe, actually, well, you just want to get in here at half time, you just want to keep it at 1-0. That's the best outcome I think that we could have hoped for at that part of the game, coming towards the end of the first half, because you do feel that if they got that second one, it could have been too big a mountain to climb. And I think the lads deserve credit for even that, just for sticking in there. We showed a few little passages of play in the first half that made you think maybe we were coming back into it. But we defended quite well apart from the goal. And it just gave us, you know, keeping it at 1-0 gave us enough hope that we could maybe do something in the second half and turn it around.
And then, maybe fitting for all the hard work that he does, some of which goes unnoticed, Sam Ashford gets the goal, which seemed to just give everybody that sense of belief again from a Cliftonville point of view.
Massive, yeah. Huge, huge goal, huge contribution in the game. And I love Sam. I have so much time for him. He's done so well just to come back into the team in recent weeks. And a massive decision from the manager as well, to be honest. He was out with, I think it was a medial knee injury. And to come back quite late into the foray, he came into the game, the league game against Linfield the week previous, scored, and then he was just thrown straight in, and he repaid everybody in bucket loads. It was just a huge, huge goal and a great finish, great header, and obviously from a great cross from Rory. And once that went in, you just felt like, yeah, maybe because we had kept it at 1-0, we hadn't conceded another in the first half, and all of a sudden it felt like the tide was maybe beginning to turn, and we started the second half a whole lot better.
It was an incredible final, and an incredible goal that starts us off in extra time with Ronan Hale's screamer. And I was saying this to Keith, and I wonder, you know, would you think this, or have anyone even said it? Ronan's second goal is nearly so iconic that people could forget how good his first goal was.
No, I think that's a good point, because all of the replays that I've seen in recent days have been the third, but it's just an iconic goal with obviously it being that important a goal at the end of the game, and with the celebration with his arms spread. But his first goal is such a good goal. In a cup final at that level, to come up with that level of quality in that moment, just shows how big a player he is, and how big a person he is. I was right behind it. He hit it so cleanly, and it was an unbelievable finish, and an unbelievable moment to come up with at that point in the game. And yeah, once that goes in, you do start believing. And then you snap yourself out of it, because you realise that there's still a lot of time left on the clock.
And I'm interested in the fact, you're a really experienced player. You've played in an Irish Cup final before. When you are summoned off the bench, are you nervous? Because people would just assume, oh, he's been in these occasions for years, he'll be fine, and you know, you certainly performed well. But was there any part of you going, oh, right, okay, you know, this is happening?
Yeah, there was. No, I won't even lie. Yeah, it was. I've never felt like that going onto a football pitch, because of the magnitude of the game, and because you did start to feel like it could be possible. I felt sick, to be honest. I did. But in those moments, I think you almost have to project a more confident self. Almost just to portray yourself to others that you are sort of calm, that it's just business as usual, and you're there to close a game out and do your job, and so you sort of have to switch to that mental professional mode nearly. But underneath it all, I was as sick as any supporter in the stand, trying to keep your nerves, and but it was difficult because you just know how much it means to everybody.
And the atmosphere that was there inside Windsor Park, anyone that was in the ground says it's one of the loudest, if not the loudest, they've heard a domestic game in that stadium.
It was unbelievable, honestly. Just incredible. Just in the days after, you just sort of count yourself so lucky to have been a part of it, and just fortunate that you were there, but you had the opportunity to obviously play in the game and play a part. And both sets of supporters were just incredible the whole way throughout, from even before the first whistle to the last minute of the game. Both sets of supporters played their part in an iconic game of football, and one that will be remembered for a long, long time to come.
And now, I mean, where's the statues going up? There's plenty of candidates, isn't there? We've seen some of the pictures of the partying. It looks like everybody's been really enjoying the trophy parade. That you could see the players were every bit as happy as the supporters were, which is such a nice thing. If you're a fan and you can really feel these guys get it. They want to play for us. They like playing for us, because not every fan of every club feels that way, you know, ever or at this moment in time. There felt like that real connection between everybody, and you know, it shouldn't be overlooked just how special it felt like. Everything just came together perfectly for you guys.
It's just this team. It's just such a special group. Love them so much. Obviously I went out on a high. Couldn't have asked for a better ending to it all. But I will. I miss this group so much. There's something very special, and it's a really tight knit group. We've stuck together all season, and in recent weeks, obviously we've run into a difficult patch in the league, but we're still just stuck together. And there's it's a group that goes to the well for each other every week, that fights for each other, and we just like each other. We like spending time with each other, spend sometimes more time with each other than we do our families and stuff like that. So it's just a group that I'll count myself lucky to have been a part of, and I'll remember fondly now for the rest of my days. I'll look back at Saturday and I'll look back at my teammates with a smile on my face, and they deserve it. All of them deserve it so much. I don't even want to go into individuals or some huge colossal individual performances on Saturday, but every player in the squad played their part, and they rightfully should be remembered as heroes, because the supporters, they've waited a lifetime for this one.
And that's what makes it all the more special. And I love the story. Somebody told me that Jim, it might have been Conor McLaughlin, actually put it on Twitter. He was saying, you know, Jim Magilton a year ago was watching the Irish Cup final and thinking, I need to get back into club management. This is amazing. And a year on, he's lifting the Irish Cup. His story, how we all know when he came in initially, people had lots of different views on things. Surely he's won everybody around now. There's no doubt the players are behind him. What an amazing journey he's taken everybody on.
Yeah, there's incredible stories throughout, but Jim's is unbelievable when you think about his start and the controversy around it, which was nonsense. Obviously the players backed him from day one and couldn't wait to get to work with him. Remember his first meeting with us out at Greenmount, where we were having some of our pre-season. The lads were just locked in and listening to his every word, and from that day on we were together. We were just a strong unit, and you know, we would go through a brick wall for him, and the lads had to do that on Saturday. So he deserves it as much as anyone. Him and the staff, they've been unbelievable all year, and I'm so happy for them that they've been able to get it over the line too, because it means so much to them as well. Obviously a number of them haven't been involved in the club for years, and Ricky and Jared Little obviously returning to the club after a few years as well, it means the world to them. You can see that in their faces after the match.
And the question everyone wants to know is, what's life after football have in store for Chris Curran? Will you be away from the game for a while? Are you hoping to stay involved? What are your thoughts?
Hopefully, obviously, stay involved in it. I love football. I love watching it. Love playing. I've started coaching, so I've started the process of getting my coaching badges, and I'm in the process of working towards my A at the moment. I think in the immediate future, well, I'm getting married now in a few weeks, so it's all sort of happening at the one time, but can't wait for that. And then my partner's being fortunate enough to be accepted into a position teaching in a university over in America, so that's where that's come from. And I'm just going to tag along and see where it takes me, but hopefully get coaching over there, stay in the game, and I suppose keep my options open for when I come back.
You know when people say, like, oh, I've had a crazy few weeks? I'm trying to imagine being Chris Curran in a month from now. And obviously, if anyone asks you on your wedding day or after what the best day of your life was, for goodness sake, don't say the Irish Cup final.
I know. I can say that for a few weeks, no longer than that.
it's been brilliant talking to you, Chris, and congratulations on an amazing career. When you think about it, your career, of course, started before Clifton Villa, and I know that, and when we've spoken before about it. But when you think about, you know, stepping out on the pitch for the first time as a Clifton Villa player against Celtic in European football and finishing it in Windsor Park with the Irish Cup in your hands, that is some achievement, and I doubt you could have really imagined much better for yourself.
No, I couldn't. It's sort of dream, it's fairy tale sort of stuff. Just I'm just so fortunate and so lucky, and I know how lucky I am, and I'm so lucky that Tommy Breslin picked up a phone one day and decided to ring me and bring me to the football club. And I've had the journey of a lifetime really since then, and I'll always be grateful to him. And I was thinking about him on Saturday, and I'm sure he was looking down at us with a smile on his face.
It's a lovely note to end it on. We're always thinking of Tommy, and well done to you, Chris, and your teammates. Massive performance, and you got the big prize at the end of it, so very well done.
Thank you. No, thanks, Michael.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Now it is time for our final guest of this series, and it's a fantastic time to be speaking to this man, the crucial touch that sent Crusaders into Europe. How many times in his career has he popped up with a goal just when his manager needed it? It is a warm welcome onto the programme for Crusaders striker Jordan Owens. Jordan, how are you?
Not too bad, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic to get you onto the programme. And before I get into all the things I want to ask you, Jordan Forsyth wants to ask, are you sure you got a touch?
I've told Jordan this loads of times. He better stop telling people it was his goal, you know. No, listen, I did get a touch on it, I'm not going to lie. It came across, you know, and I actually seen somebody on the line, so I just stuck my foot out and actually come off the bottom of my shin, and you know, so at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, Michael, as long as the ball went into net. But again, it was a crucial goal, so I had to claim it.
Well, in fairness to Jordan, when I was talking to him earlier, he said it's not like you would try and steal the goal. And I also reminded him, you've made a habit of scoring quite a few yourself, so you don't really need to brush up your tally too much by nicking any.
No, I don't. And I said that to Jordan then, and I says, look, he knows him. He actually came out and he says, that was your goal, I actually seen it come off you, you know. But at the end of the day, that was the main thing. I think it was in the 92nd minute, you know, we were under pressure a wee bit from Coley and Kamadas a wee bit, you know, but it was, we got a corner, you know, and the likes of me and Adam Lackey in the box, and with Jordan himself, you know, we're always going to be a threat, and, you know, thankfully we got it in the end.
What have the last few days been like? Watching that match, it was bedlam, wasn't it, the finish of it? But it you could tell how much it meant to every single one of you to do that for Stephen Baxter and to make sure that he had that type of finish.
Yeah, it was. We all know Stephen, that was his last game, you know, and all the hike up there, he didn't want anything, you know, it was my last game, and he wanted to finish in the high, and, you know, we've done them proud, and that their achievement, you know, we've our league form the last six or seven matches have been super. Our performances, you know, he's chopped and changed the team, he's give young lads a go, you know, to see what the future is for Declan, and, you know, he's been great, you know, he's been great to me, and I'm thankful we got over the line for him, and he's left on a high.
When you think of Stephen Baxter, you do think of Jordan Owens, and you think of a few of your teammates that have been there for the long haul. I mean, you are synonymous with him. What has Stephen Baxter meant for you in your career?
Listen, I've said this the past 2 days, you know, Stephen's the only one I've worked under, and, you know, me and him, you know, he's like a fatherhood to me, you know. He looked after me at the club, anything, you know, I needed, or I, you know, he pushed me to where I am now. You know, I can remember him picking me up as a 16-year-old down Loughside, you know, coming to watch me against the Ards, and, you know, scored a hat trick, and he says, come up and train with the first team. I think we were only coming up in around the Irish League again after the relegation, you know. So, you know, he picked me up from there, and ever from that, you know, I'm thankful for him, because he's, you know, he's a top manager and a top guy, and as I say, for a centre forward to work with centre forward, it was always going to be good for me, you know, throughout my career. And the goals I've scored, you know, I work with him after training and things, and before games, you know, we'd always have a wee, you know, a thing that we would usually do. But, you know, as I say, the things he's done for me over the years, I can't thank him enough. And he's a great man, and I am gutted, honest to God, I'm gutted that he's gone. But yes, and it was up to Stephen, and he made his choice that he wanted to step down. And, you know, good luck to him, because, you know, I can't see him staying in the game for too long. He hopefully be back in it again and pushing, you know, again, because he's a great manager and he's a great person.
699 games you have played for Crusaders Football Club. That is absolutely staggering. It's such a long time to be doing it at that level and with that manager. I don't think people could really truly appreciate how close a bond you must have formed.
Yeah, but Ed, I don't really look at the stats as much. I actually seen that the other day and I was going flip it. I didn't know it was that much. I thought it was maybe 650, you know, but it's incredible, you know. But again, I just got on with it, you know, and my job was to come on this season. Maybe it wasn't to take much part in the teams, come on, you know, in crucial games. Maybe when games are so close to 2-each, or, you know, we're down 1-0, you know. But he gave me the nod the other day, you know, as he always does, you know, around, I know, sort of know at time, and I'd have to come on and do the job for us. But, you know, it's I know Stephen knows my body and what way I needed to work, you know, throughout my career, and he maybe rested me here and rested me. I just knew what it needed out of me, and I agreed with that, you know, and it got me to here now. Maybe the legs aren't as good as they used to be, you know, but as I say, I could just give everything to the team and empty the tank.
And Jordan, it's a thing that you and your you know, everyone at Crusaders have had to put up with, even when you were winning league titles. People, there were those who sort of went, oh, Crusaders, and they didn't like the way you guys played, and yet it delivered silverware. Did it ever annoy you? I mean, I'm sure probably looking across at a Gibson Cup or an Irish Cup, you kind of go, aye, dead on. But, you know, when you hear people complaining about how you play when you're winning, it's a strange thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And Michael, you know, Nike, and you see teams sort of, you know, playing a long ball with that, trying to get wingers in, maybe centre forward, getting it's all, you know, Irish League's a different ball game, I think, than the English. You know, you're in the Irish League, you've no time in the ball. You know, you have to, you know, boys are in behind the tackles, or they're touch tight there. You know, where you watch the English League, you're getting time in the ball, but you're not getting that in the Irish League, you know. And over the years, you know, as people say, all we do, all people say is we thump it up, hoof ball and that there, but it worked, you know. We won 3 league titles, Irish Cups, and, you know, and for maybe 3 years or 4 years in a row, we're staying. When we were winning leagues, you know, it was the same team. It was the same 11 every year off the week. Stephen really didn't have to do much in his team talk, and we were successful to it. And, you know, anybody that can argue with that there, you know, 3 league titles and four Irish Cups and whatever league cup, you know, it's a hard one to call, like, you know. And if you're going to be successful, then why not do it? But as you say, people did criticise him, but it worked, and it worked a treat.
Is there, do you think, a thing you can put your finger on and say, this is what made us winners? You know, the personnel is a big part of it, and everything needs to come together. But is there one thing that you think in your most successful spell was what just set you apart from other teams and allowed you to be that side that, you know, was top of the tree come the end of it all?
Well, I'd always, Seaview would always been a tough place to come, I think, for people. You know, we were very, very good at home, and we knew what way to play, and, you know, it was a tight pitch, and we murdered teams when they came. Like, at that time, we were running three, when we went into 3 league titles, I always thought our home form was always our best, you know, and we got the results in big games against Linfield, Glentoran, Cliftonville. You know, when they came to us, we, you know, our away form was just as good, honestly. But I thought when every CB was a, you know, it was always a big place to come, and we always lit it up, but when we were going for the league, and I was just always, and we got the crowd behind us. But again, it was all about the team, you know, our team bonding and stuff throughout. That was great, and with a good squad, and, you know, at there's what gets you the trophies, and at the end of the season.
And I'd imagine a few of your teammates sometimes after Stephen gave one of his rousing, very well spoken team talks, were going, "What does half of those words mean?"
Yeah, I've seen him. You know, I've seen him. People wouldn't want to get the other end of Stephen, you know. He has getting in the digs, nearly digging with players and arguing with players in the changing room, but that's all part and parcel, isn't it? And He just wants the best. That's the good thing about Steen. He just wants the best out of you. And if us as a team we're not seeing somebody giving their 100% for the team, then Steven has to react. And I've seen that over the years. And you know, if one person's not going along with the other lads, you know, lets the team down. But that there, we've seen very little out there. You know, over the years when we were winning leagues, you know, we were all in it together, and that was just to say. We're one team and we just carried on and done our own thing.
And this season, when it was tough and results weren't going your way and there was plenty of reasons to feel down in yourselves, to get yourself into a position where you finish where you do, you get the home advantage, you win your semi-final and you win your final, it must be so satisfying that you've been able to actually end on a high in a campaign where it probably hasn't been that enjoyable for large periods.
Yeah, I think our league form this year, you know, we're very, very disappointed now. I think we started well, you know, we lost a few players. You know, Jimmy Callagher was a big loss for us, Rory McKeown, you know. I think our defensive, you know, with Josh being out as well, you know, all knee injuries long term, and you know, we lost Ben there to a wee bit of a knee. He was only back there to start the season. You know, things like that, you know, don't help you. But, you know, the way we've reacted towards the end of the season has been super. You know, as you say, then, I think our last six league games, you know, we five wins, and, you know, bringing that form into the playoffs, you know, was most important too. And, you know, we beat Larne, we beat Cliftonville going into that there, you know, so they're the teams that were in form. But, you know, as I say, we're a wee bit disappointed in where our league performance went this year, you know. But again, to top it off with winning the playoff there, you know, is probably the highlight of the season, you know. And we look forward to Europe now.
How, and I don't mean any disrespect to him because I wish him all the very best, how weird will it be having Declan Cadell as your manager? Because you've known him for so long, the dynamic naturally is going to change. He's the new gaffer. Will it take a bit of getting used to?
Probably will. You know, Declan knows the club. You know, he's not a new face around the club. He knows the club inside out. He's worked with the academy and he knows younger players now. You know, what he maybe he's going to look forward to bringing up maybe to the first team. And you know, but again, it will be weird with Stephen being there for so long, especially for myself, being used to him and what thing that's all new down to Declan, all his culture, what he's going to do, what way he wants to play, you know. So it'll all be new, but again, we'll all probably have to want to buy into it. And I hope it all works out for Declan, you know, because again, he's a great servant to our club and he knows the club inside out.
And when we're talking about servants of the club, Paul Heatley, it looks like has played his last game for Crusaders. What was said afterwards? I could see all the hugs and everything going on, and I've heard a few rumours people are still trying to get him to change his mind in that, so maybe yeah, you can give us an exclusive.
I'm one of them. I've been torturing him the last couple of days. You know, I've 1 year left my contract myself. Will you not see it out with me? That's all I'm saying to me. But he's not giving me a straight answer. But no, yes, you know, I've played with Paul for the past flipping 12 years, you know. And you know what a player he could play. He's 45 if he wanted to, you know. But he's, you know, it's up to him now what he wants to do. But I would love him to stay for another year. And as you say, boys are trying to make him, and Declan I think wants to speak to him to see what's going on with him. And hopefully we can get him for another year, because he's probably one of the best in the Irish league over the years, scoring goals, and his pace is frightening. So player that anybody in the club, I think, in the Irish league would want.
Watch this space. You never know. It sounds like there's a potential wee arm to be twisted there. And just finally, before I let you go, talk to me about your own coaching journey. How are things going with you? I know you're a big part of the team that went to the Harry Cavan final. Saw you down in the pitch afterwards. Was watching the pictures. Sadly, couldn't be there on the night. But how's it all going? And is that something that you're going to pursue? Or are you just scratching a wee bit of an itch? Where are you at with it all?
No, I'm doing my A pro here in 2 weeks' time, so I'm doing it for a week here. I'm looking forward to it. I've been with the under 18s this year, and I've enjoyed it. You know, it's good to see young lads coming through, and Declan's been at that the last year himself. You know, he knows young ones and you know what they're like, and are they ready for first team football, reserve team football, you know. So that's what it's all about, I think, you know, creating young ones coming through. Like myself and Declan have done that over the years, you know, we've come through the youth. But it's good to see, and there is a good prospect going through there. But as I say, I'm doing a pro here. I've had a year over me with the under 18s, and I'm really enjoying it. So I've a year left my contract. I still want to be involved around the first team and stuff, and as I say, I'll work towards my coaching while I'm doing that.
It does make me feel old. I've said this in the programme already, but 10, whatever, probably closer to 15 years covering the league, and you know, looking down and seeing you and Declan and Andy Mitchell and the other dugout, and you're going, no, you are all the players that are around the same age as me. You can't be managers, you can't.
Yeah, no, it's hard, as you say, and you look back at it, it doesn't seem to be 15 or 16 years ago that you were playing, you know, under 16 football. It flies in your career, you know, but again, it's up to you what you want to do, and if you want to take that role on and stay in the game, which I really want to do, you know, and stay involved. It's you know, especially where I am at Crusaders, it's like a second home to me, and as I say, I'll hope to see what the future holds for me.
Exciting times ahead for you too, clearly, and this is the last question, and I'll save the silliest question to last. Can I get a definitive answer? Who started calling you Chicken and why?
I was actually after the gamer on Monday, or a wee young lad come up and he says, "What do they call you Chicken for?" I says, "Listen, I'll tell your daddy later on or something." His daddy, I says, he kept ramming on me. No, listen, I get stuck with this when I was at secondary school. When I scored, they all used to do a celebration, and I just stuck with a chicken dance, and there's where it all came from. Silliest thing ever, that's where it all started.
If you could go back in time, would you have done a different celebration?
Probably. Because all you get is, what do you call you Chicken for? What do you call you Chicken for? Just have to get on me, Michael.
You do. Well, look, it could be worse. You could have done the Sue, and they'd be calling you Sue, and you'd be a Johnny Cash song. Brilliant to have you on. Congratulations on getting that crucial touch, getting that send-off for your manager that you wanted, and getting yourself back in Europe. You've got an adventure to look forward to yet again. I know how much everyone looks forward to the European trip. So, Jordan, thanks for coming on to the show, and go and enjoy whatever little summer break you can have.
That's it, Michael. Thanks very much, and have a nice summer yourself.
The Score with Michael Clark.
That is almost us for this series of The Score, and before we go, I must share some very big news with you, which affects anyone who has been listening to this programme on the radio. This is the final show on Lisburn's 98FM, on Bangor FM, or FM 105. It's time for this programme and this presenter to find a new home. Yes, so some exciting developments to come. We'll be telling you about that when we can, but sincerely, whether you've only listened in recent weeks and months or for many years, it is genuinely appreciated that you keep in touch, that you reach out, and I'm so glad you enjoy the people that we talk to and the stories that they share. I'm very grateful to Keith Bailey, Chris Curran and Jordan Owens for joining us on this programme, and I'm grateful for all of the guests who have helped us bring you this series that I am immensely proud of. I've really enjoyed bringing you the programme across our network and growing it to the place where it is today. It will continue as a podcast and it will continue to grow. The Score and I is where you can follow us and where you can keep in touch at all times. Thank you so much for being a part of this. And we will speak to you again very soon. I can promise you that. Have a great summer. Bye-bye.